Welcome to the Diecast, everybody. I'm Seamus. With me this week is Christopher.
Hello.
Mumblo.
I'm dying.
George.
Aren't we all dying, though, in our own way?
And Rutzgarn.
I'm not. Right.
Well, that's because you are perpetually too young to die.
Oh, hey, I guess I get the last laugh. actually, probably.
That means, you realize that means you will get to endure Rutzgarn his underage jokes literally for eternity?
That's what occurred to me, yes. There will always be somebody to step up and take your mantle. Mobile's probably is, like, already training her successor.
It's true.
She's going to create, like, a whole secret order of people dedicated to harassing Rutzgarn by making fun of his age.
I've already started.
I'm training my 18-year-old daughter to make jokes about how young Rutzgarn is.
She's older than Rutzgarn now, isn't she?
I believe so. So, video games. Let's talk about video games.
Do we have to?
Yeah, we do. It's your job. I notice we have a list of everything everybody wants to discuss, and Chris has this huge list of games that he's played, and everybody else is like, I walked my dog or some shit this week. Like, nobody does anything. Nobody plays any video games.
Oxenfree took up a lot of my time this week. Pretty much all of my time.
Is that a video game?
Oxenfree, yeah. It is.
All right, I stand corrected from a seated
position.
I
also jumped on the Oxenfree bandwagon.
I actually just realized that I have that game now and I need to play it.
Probably.
Okay, so I know this game is an indie game, and I know it's about things, so let me just ask this up front, without any spoilers, is this the sort of game I should play when I'm in a decent mood, or the sort of game I should play when I am constitutionally able to be depressed the fuck out of?
It's not that depressing. It's not Firewatch depressing.
Okay, what is Oxenfree?
Joshua, you want to tell him?
Fuck, I don't know.
Okay, that's the Diecast, everybody. We play games,
leave it there.
We don't know what they are, we can't describe them, and we have no opinion on them. This is the best video game podcast ever.
I saw a guy playing a computer game, like, on his television. I think it had a guy in it.
Get the fuck out.
Okay, so Oxenfree is this story about this group of teenagers who go to a island to party, but they discover ghosts by using their radio. And the coolest thing about the game is you can tune the radio with your scrolly button on your mouse. So it feels like tuning a real radio.
Wait. You can tune it by scrolling?
Yeah.
Shit, I played that whole game by click and dragging that.
You fucking idiot. Yeah.
That gets really old when you get like 100 frequencies too.
Oh yeah, I bet. No, that made it even more fun with the scrolling, because you're like scroll, 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 scroll. But it has probably the best dialogue system in a game I have ever fucking seen. Because
whoa.
Yeah, no. So basically, you know, like in Telltale games where you only have a certain amount of time to answer a question, they have that too. But you're more kind of, you're trained as the game goes on to sometimes not say shit. Because you realize that sometimes it's better just to not fucking say anything. And I've never felt that way in a Telltale game. In a Telltale game, I feel like, oh, I have to say something. In this game, sometimes you know you're going to piss someone off if you say something. And you don't want to make them mad, so you just don't. And then it just kind of is okay. It feels really natural, like one character will be talking and then you'll interrupt and then the other character will start talking and then maybe they'll finish a thought and then you'll say something. It's the most natural feeling dialogue system I've ever fucking seen. It's so good. It's so fucking good.
There are also no, like, cutscenes. I mean, there are things you could call cutscenes, but the dialogue all takes place, like, in the game. You don't get pulled out of doing whatever you're doing to, oh, we're going to have you're going to talk about this now.
Yeah, it's pretty great. The artwork is really beautiful. It constantly feels like you're in a comic book. And it's just, there's a lot of care put into the backgrounds and the character models and stuff like that. It's spooky. It's so fucking spooky. It's not gonna like, it doesn't have jump scare. Oh, it has a couple jump scares. But it's not as scary as like Amnesia or Soma or anything like that. It's mostly just spooky. Like it just kind of like sits with you. And it's real good. It's real good. Great music. Yeah. I wrote about the music on my blog, if you guys want to go check that out. And yeah, so there you go.
I was trying to decide if I would actually classify it as a horror game or not, because it definitely has some horror game moments in it.
It's definitely, it's gothic. To me, it's a very gothic game, like in the traditional sense that there's this feeling that you don't know what's going on and this feeling of old stuff coming back to fuck with you and mind games. There's a lot of mind games in it. So it's very gothic, but it doesn't try and like freak you out. It doesn't, you know what I mean? Like, there's no jump scares, but it's scary.
Right, yeah, it's not like, oh, this is the part where you run away from the monster. Run away from the monster now.
Yeah, exactly, which I like.
It does kind of like what you wish Soma did, where Soma was great when it was spooky and really, really boring when you actually had the amnesia monsters following you around and getting in your way.
Yeah.
And you're just like, go away, I want to just get to the next interesting
bit. The
game
was scary until it tried to scare you.
Yeah. This game does it much better.
The monsters will use recordings that they've heard over the radios. So it'll be this like old timey 1940s guy talking, and it's so fucking creepy. It's so smart, and he's like such a good voice actor. The voice acting is so good, and you can understand the story. There's so much like history put into the place. There's just so much love and care put into the game, and to me that makes it difficult for me to like criticize it because there's so much thought put into it. You know what I mean? And that's what, to me, makes a really good indie game.
All that said, I still don't really understand exactly what happened in the ending.
It looped. Fucking spoilers. Shit! I don't want to spoil it.
We don't have to.
Shit! I know what happened. I can talk to you about it later, Joshua.
Okay,
I understand
cool.
It. Yeah. Yeah, I was kind of sad there wasn't, like, multiple endings. There is pretty much only one ending, but the relationships that you have with the different people change.
I did the most boring options for every. I did everything that everyone else, the majority of everyone else, did for the ending of my game.
I did one thing that was weird. I did, and I also collected all the letters thinking that would change stuff, but
yeah,
it just
I
gives
too.
You extra dialogue. It's just kind of whatever.
Although when it was like, oh, by the way, you can also go find these anomalies, it was like, I was like, fuck that.
Well,
I got the letters
okay.
And that was it.
Oh, so the game also has an ARG. So there's also a number you can call. I'll add it to the doc so you can put it onto the post for this.
Wait, really? Is that what that is?
There's a phone number you can call. Yeah, so if you collect all the anomalies, they spell out numbers. And then you call that number, and it plays the soundtrack to the game for, like, a couple seconds, and then it beeps, and you can leave a message. And people call and leave messages. And I actually called and left a message where I said, I'll be the first person to say poop on this thing, but I don't think they posted it. So they have a Twitter account that, like, posts all of them. And I don't think they wanted to post mine, which is fine. There's an ARG that's kind of... I think if more people participated, maybe we can get a different ending, basically. So I'll add a link to that, which is pretty cool.
There's also a cool bit where, I don't know if this is spoiling stuff per se, but like people
into
from your friends list.
Must fall.
People from your friends list will show up and tell you what to do in the middle of the game.
Oh, that's what
and
was.
And you showed up in mine, Mumbles, And you gave me some advice that I followed, and I'm not sure if that had any effect on anything. Yeah, you and Verwolf showed up, and then some person from the TF2 server that I haven't talked to in 4 years. So,
is it people that have played the game,
or
yeah,
is it?
There's a point where you're towards the end of the game where you get to like say stuff to like come up with the prompts to actually like say tell yourself what to do in the past, and then like people who've played through the game will like pop up with their advice to you as you're playing through it.
Oh, so I wonder if it saved my advice and then sent it to you? Is that possible?
Yeah.
Or
I guess
weird.
That's what happened.
Weird.
Did that not happen for you, or did you like play it before?
It did happen
to
me, but I didn't realize. I didn't realize what the. I couldn't read the name because it's usually upside down,
oh.
So I couldn't read the name. But I knew it was like a Steam thing. But that's really interesting, huh? It's fun.
Okay, moving on. Hang on. We're actually done with Oxenfree? It sounded like we were done. You guys are good.
Yeah, we're done.
Okay. It's cool. You guys should play it.
Oh, yeah, you should play it.
Okay, moving on. Let's talk about Devil Daggers, which is... Chris, describe Devil Dagger.
I've seen it described, I think, on Killscreen or somewhere else as basically Quake for the Vine generation. I think that's kind of pithy, it sums it up nicely. It's basically a super hexagon-style, small-scale, rapid game where no game lasts longer than, you know, at most, if you're amazingly good, maybe 10 or 15 minutes. But that's, like, you know, 1% tier amazing good. Most games last less than a minute.
There have been 10-minute games. Okay, this is actually what ruined the game for me. My first game was, like, you know, you last 10 seconds, and you're like, oh, it feels like Hotline Miami, where you die, and then you restart and you die. And then, you know, you get better, and it's like, oh, I made it a whole minute. And then I saw a video of somebody going for 8 minutes, and I lost all desire to play the game. Just, I felt like I'm never going to be that good.
So, Camster, you say, like, the top 1% might get to, like, 10 or 15 minutes, so... And you're comparing it to Super Hexagon. So are you saying that you typically play like 45-minute games or something?
No. Seamus has a higher score than me right now. Seamus is beating me. I capped out around like 64,000, and I'm trying to beat that. But
you were like 64. Just to give background, you were like in the top 10 of Super Hexagon at one point, weren't you?
I was just better than anyone on my friends list. That's actually something that Devil Daggers does a good job of, is there's a friends list high scorer list, and then there's the overall high scorer list, and it gives you good visibility into both. So you know that, you know, when I first started playing the game and I got like a 50,000 score, I was like 3,000th, but that was also when the game just came out. I'm sure I'm down around like 10,000 or whatever, some crazy low number now. But then it also shows me my friends, and I have like four or five other people that have played the game, and I'm better than some and worse than others. And I like games that have the friends list, high score list, because I like being able to compete with people I know rather than just upping my rank overall, because you'll never get to the top.
Right. To be clear, that's how I read the scores at first. Oh, I got 30,000. Oh, this game I only got 20,000. I felt like I was doing better. I realized that's not thousands. That's not a comma. That's a decimal point, and my score was 30.010. Your score is nothing more than seconds. That is your score. And I was like, oh, these red things seem to like do something when you gather them. Maybe that's upping my score. No. Nothing you do ups your score except not dying. And that your score is how long you played. So if your high score is 50... you know, 1,000, it's really, you know, 50.013 seconds or whatever. So, yeah, that's how the game works. Nothing more than time. And I guess we never described it. It's just you are on a stone platform floating in space, and, like, very demon-esque stuff starts boiling out of the ground trying to kill you. You've got flying skulls, giant insects. It's very dark and Hexen-ish, if anybody played that, if you remember Hexen. And you just shoot...
That's a name I have not heard in a long time.
I know. And you just shoot, like, red stuff out of your fingertips, which basically... They're projectiles that travel. This isn't hit scan. And so,
is this first person?
First person.
Yeah.
Okay.
And yeah, that's basically the game. It's kill the red things you gather do help you over the long run. I notice if you watch somebody play for 10 minutes, they shoot way faster. Like when you kill something, it drops this little red thing and you pick it up. And once you've picked up enough of them, you've got more red. It's the stuff you're shooting. It's like you can shoot more magic missiles at once. And so that's basically it. But Chris, you said there are people that have gone for 15 minutes now.
I don't know the exact high scores. I haven't checked. I just know that there is a achievement that last time I checked only one person had, which was go for 500 seconds, which is what? That's not quite 10 minutes. That's like 8.5 minutes, something like that.
Yeah. Well, the one I saw was a YouTube video of somebody going for 8 minutes. And I thought that was just amazing. You think he's... Because a lot of the time, you're backpedaling, right? Stuff moves faster than you, but they can't corner as much. So you're doing the classic circle strafing from Days of Yore. This is very much like Doom-style gameplay. Backpedaling, circle strafing the whole way. But you're on a platform, and it's easy to blunder off. You know, you just walk backwards off the platform and die. Or you back into one of the monsters that's everywhere. I can't even figure out how these people are lasting for so long. How are you not backing into things?
If you watch a lot of the... That's the other cool thing the game does, is it saves everyone's replay, so you can watch these, you know, 10-minute things. So you can watch the highest scoring games if you want to see what they did. And... One of the things that makes them interesting is that they do a lot of quick glances left, right, and behind. And what basically the trick to the game seems to be is being able to memorize how the monsters move and being able to think spatially at all times about where all these hordes of monsters are so that you know where you need to move to not be where they probably will be. Like,
yeah,
you need to be running and simulating.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You dodging monsters you can't see kind of thing because they're behind you.
The other thing the game does that's pretty cool is basically there's only really two weapons. One is like you hold it down and it just does the sort of like a machine gun in a video game, just constant spread.
Like the Doom plasma rifle.
Right. And yeah. Then if you click real fast, it's like a shotgun that just blasts out. So instead of having a concentrated beam, it's more of an area of effect. But then they also combine that with if you aim down and jump while firing that shotgun blast, it's basically a rocket jump. So there's little tiny tricks that let you like manipulate your way around the environment more quickly than you might be able to otherwise. Just cool little tricks like that. I don't know. It's basically if you really like Quake 1 or Hexen or Heretic, and if you really like Super Hexagon, it's basically Super Hexenagon.
Oh, I liked it. I mean, this is not a game you'll play for ages. This is game you play for probably a couple hours and then you're done. Not even. Like, some people might be done with the game in half an hour.
Yeah, I mean, it's $5. It's a little cheapy thing, but it is pretty robust in terms of if you really want to have that retro look mixed with some really hard shooty bits. I liked it.
I really liked it. Let's go to Mumblo. You have a Star Wars book you want to talk about?
Yeah, so I know I'm not the only one jonesing.
What?
Star Wars books are great. I actually grew up reading some Star Wars books. I would steal them from my cousins and then never give them back because I'm one of those kind of people. But actually, here's a funny story before I start. I have this one cousin who loves Star Wars books, and he's grown up with them his whole life, and he has, like, shelves and shelves and collections, and he, like, saved up all his money to buy them when he was a kid, and then Disney was like, oh, well, all that shit doesn't actually count, it's not real, we're gonna recreate the universe, basically, And he's like, all of my money from being a kid is fucking wasted. All of those books mean nothing now. And he was so sad. It was the greatest Christmas ever. Anyway, so it was a Christmas miracle.
It was the greatest Christmas ever, mumbles 2016.
Okay, so there's this book called Lost Stars, and I know that I'm not the only one jonesing for, like, I don't know, just cheesy romance that you can get from, like, BioWare and stuff like that. Because that's my favorite thing about BioWare, is the cheesy romance stuff. Surprise to no one. And it's about these two kids who...
Is this the one that's about Poe's parents, or...
I don't know. No. Okay, so anyway, it's about these two kids who grew up as the Empire was taking over, and they both really, really want to be pilots for the Empire. And then as they come of age, as soon as they, like, turn into adults, that's when New Hope starts. And so they witness the Death Star blowing up, they witness Alderaan blowing up, and it's an Imperial side of the story, and they're both really good kids. And then one of them gets, you know, sad about it stuff, and he ends up, I think he ends up being the rebel. I haven't gotten that far yet, but it seems that way. And but they love each other. And so you have one person who's, like, really, really, really loyal to the Empire, and one person who's like, fuck the Empire. And it kind of shows different, like, sides of the war, and the romance is really cute, and the characters are really good. So if you're looking for a Star Wars book, I think it's good. It's just a young adult, silly, and you'll get through it really fast, but it's really cute, and I like it. And they put in stuff from the movies, like, oh, we captured Princess Leia, and they were... Oh, the escape pods were going out, and that's weird because there's no life forms on it, so we don't have to worry about it. I was like, from the movies, yeah.
I always like to think that the guy who in that scene said, like, you know, oh, don't fire, there's no life forms, probably just a short circuit, like it becomes this horrible alcoholic broken man afterwards because he knows that he let the Death Star plans go and the Death Star got blown up all because
of
him.
They have cute little things like, oh, why would I ever want to go down to that sand planet? There's no one down there that's important.
He's the Bill Buckner of the Empire.
It's cool. It's a really cool... So if you're looking for... You know, BioWare-flavored romance. And I mean that in the best way possible. Just, like, fun, lighthearted. And also, fun Star Wars stuff. That's the book for you. You should check it out. I've never done a book recommendation on this fucking show before. It feels weird. It feels really weird. What's next? Wrestling? Nobody knows.
Well, you've done wrestling recommendations before.
I'll never do it again.
You need to recommend wrestling books, novels about wrestling.
I do. I know some wrestling.
Please
books
tell
that,
me there's. Please tell me there's young adult novels about wrestling.
I will look. I don't think so, but there are some comic books about wrestling. That
Why
are
is there not like a
good.
Young adult dystopia novel about a world where everyone is wrestlers?
I don't know.
I want to see the trashy wrestler romance novels.
Right? Me too.
WrestleMance.
And just to be clear, Lost Stars isn't trashy romance. If you're looking for trashy romance, look somewhere else. It's cute. It's really innocent, sweet. Cute young people being in love kind of stuff. I love it.
Oh, I'm going to be sick. All right, Josh.
Hello.
What did you want to talk about?
Well, aside from Oxenfree, I played a tiny bit of XCOM 2, like three missions. My only real reaction right now is, hey, it's XCOM, and holy crap, this game doesn't run very good. Like,
really? I haven't heard that yet.
I have heard a lot of complaints about it running not very well. Like, I can run The Witcher 3 at max settings at like something like 70 or 80 FPS average. This game gets like 30, and it doesn't look good enough to justify that.
Okay, yes. I have also noted this, and I'm glad it's not just me.
No. I mean, I can get decent frame rates by turning it down a little bit, but like it's still like it doesn't make sense to me that the game doesn't run as that well.
I mean, for some reason the loading screens are about 10 times, literally about 10 times as long as they were in XCOM 1.
Yeah, I mean, I've thought about putting it on my solid state drive, but I'm not sure I actually want to go to that trouble.
Wow.
Because my solid state drive just like doesn't have that kind of space on it for this, and I've already got Fallout 4 on it, so yeah, the loading times are really long. The like sometimes stuff will just like it won't be lag, but it'll like I'll pop in and see some aliens, and normally you get like the alien cutscene plays and then they move around, but it'll take like 15 seconds for that to trigger. Yeah,
it still does that. I that was the worst thing. I thought they'll fix that for sure in the next game.
So it doesn't do that if your team is concealed and you see them. It doesn't give them that free turn. I don't think it does anyway. I don't remember. But if your team is
yeah,
not concealed,
like, I lost a guy because of that.
Yeah.
Well, everything people say about this game is unselling it to me. Like, I liked the first one, but I have just no interest in this second one now. Just everything, long loading times. They didn't get rid of the stupid introduction cutscenes, which I think destroys the rhythm of the game. I really, really hated that feature. I thought it was a horrible idea, and I can't believe they kept it. Just even the idea of having fixed groups of enemies, like in the old game, when you saw a guy, you're like, is he alone? Is he part of a group? All I see is this one guy.
Yeah.
And in the new game, it's like, here's a cutscene. Now they're all suddenly here. They came into view without you getting an opportunity to shoot them. They get a free turn. So it felt cheaty, immersion-breaking, stupid, and it took away a lot of the mystery. I thought it was a horrible idea. And they're still doing it.
Yeah, I mean, like, that's what I mean by saying it's XCOM. Like, everything that was in the other game is in this one. For better or worse, it seems like that.
Customization's on point, though. So if that's your sort of thing, it might actually just be... It might be worth playing the game just for that, actually.
Yeah. But that, like, I don't have a whole lot of...
Maybe that's the loading
screen. ...stuff to say about it yet. It's still got that ridiculously cheesy story going on, but now it's, like, even more super serial because, oh, we're the rebels, and it's terrible, and the aliens have taken over the planet. We gotta be rebels and do rebel stuff. But I need to play some more before I have real impressions on it. Perhaps somewhat more interestingly for all you people here who are really into this sort of thing, I bought a mechanical keyboard because my old keyboard was dying.
When you say mechanical, what is this distinction? You're talking about like the kinds with the clicky keys?
Yeah, okay, so, like, most, like, your normal cheapo keyboards, they use what are called rubber membrane switches. So basically you've got you put the keycap on top of this this sort of squishy, springy rubber switch, and when you push down on the key, it pushes down on that switch, which makes contact between two contact points on the plastic board underneath. With a mechanical keyboard, you have, like, actual mechanical action switches of various different kinds. The earliest mechanical keyboards used basically buckling springs, where the spring would get pushed down to a certain extent, and then it would pop forward and make contact. The one that I'm using uses some, like, complex thing of... levers and springs that I don't really fully understand, but the end result is a very tactile, springy sort of key press that has a lot of like physical feedback versus the sort of mushy quality of pressing keys on a membrane Switch keyboard. And that's why people like them. This is actually the first time I've ever even used a mechanical keyboard. So I had no idea what I was in for going in.
That was, for a long time, that was the only kind of keyboard you could buy. Like, that was my entire youth. I don't think I owned
an IBM Model M.
I don't know if it was a Model M, but I know I had to have used a Model M, Model M at school.
My school had iMacs.
Wow, you are young. my school
The old iMacs, but yeah.
The old my high school, there was a bit of a divide. The Votech that I went to, the vocational school, had real IBM machines, but then the high school had Apple IIs. So that's when I was in school. That should date me pretty well. But I remember the big clicky-clack keyboards, and I didn't like making the jump away from them. For one thing, the mechanical distinction always confused me, because, you know, this new system is still mechanical, it's still moving parts.
Yeah, it's not, it's different. It's a bad term.
It is. But I actually liked moving to it took me a while to get, I hated them at first. But then I went back to a mechanical keyboard years later, like in the early aughts, and I thought it felt really weird and off-putting, and I felt like it was a lot of work, and it was really noisy, which is bad.
Yeah, I've got. I intentionally got one.
I have one too. See, look.
Wow!
Nice.
You guys.
Yeah.
I own classic keyboards.
Mine,
well, this is not a classic.
Glows green, though. Mine glows green, and I pretend that I stole it from the Riddler. So,
I was sad. Mine has backlighting, which I'm not like super jazzed about, because like, why would I want my keyboard to light up? But it's got it.
Oh, that's the only kind of keyboard I'll use. Is I want a keyboard that lights up.
I love blacklight. Yeah, it's neon green. How could you not love
mine
that?
Mine is just it's only white.
It's the
least kind.
Okay, nerd brag time. Mine has a selection of colors. I can go through the whole rainbow and you choose any color, or I can just put it on rainbow mode where it's like stripes of different. It goes, where it just looks like a big rainbow. And what did Rachel call it? My gay board? So that's the one I own. And light up backlit keyboards make a lot of sense if you sit in the dark a lot, which I do.
See, I sit in the dark a lot, but like, there are situations where I don't want my keyboard to be shining at me. Like if I'm playing a spooky game, I don't want to have my keyboard lit up in the background.
Yeah, I can, you know? I can understand.
Fortunately, I can turn off the backlighting on this. Not like, it's not that primitive of a backlighting thing where I can't even make it be backlit, but, I was thinking briefly about springing for one of those cool boards with the backlighting where you can set it to like light up the keys that you've pressed for a little while, so it looks like it has that like cool kind of ripple effect where you typed a bit and you can see all the keys that you typed on slowly fading out.
Yeah.
That would have been cool, but I need a new keyboard, and because my old keyboard is kind of breaking in half, actually, and the space bar is not.
What have you been doing to
popping
it?
Popping up. It's super old. It's like 10 years.
But I mean, I've owned a lot of keyboards, and I've never had that problem. Well, okay, I've had them break in half, but that was because I broke them. Like I get mad and just slam it down. Okay, I'm done with.
Whoa, buddy.
Yeah.
I See, used I've to been buy mad super plenty of times, cheap... but I've never once blamed the keyboard.
Oh, I don't blame the keyboard. I absolutely don't. But you get really frustrated. Your body gives you a giant dose of adrenaline, and it's got to go somewhere. And it's like, well, I need to get this energy out. And so you smash something. I mean, very few people just, I lost control. Well, you know, you were having a physiological reaction to a bunch of unwanted adrenaline. And for me, this was a good way. You actually feel better. It dispels the adrenaline after you smash something. And so for a few years, this was especially powerful when I was on steroids. It just, oh, like I refuse to take steroids because of this problem now, because it just makes me a monster. But I would just like keep a stack of cheap keyboards. I'd wait for Newegg to have keyboards on sale for like $5 a piece. And then I'd order like a half dozen of them. You get pissed off the computer, you scream a bunch of swear words, you smash it into pieces, pull out another keyboard, plug it in, get back to work. And that was my life.
Oh my god.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. I'm glad I'm through that phase of my life.
Why don't you tell us more about Hulk Sheamus and the steroids?
Yeah. It doesn't happen anymore, really. It was a combination of just, you know, being young and having a bit of a temper and being on steroids, and the other asthma medicines I'm on also have that side effect, and it would just make me. It just had a really explosive temper. And it's important. Some people will like not address their explosive temper. They're like, okay, people will give bad advice. If you don't have an explosive temper, then you think, oh, this person is just bad at managing their anger. I will give them some advice. And then you'll give them really shitty advice. Like, why don't you try counting to 10? Okay, don't ever say that. That's the equivalent of going up to a depressed person and saying, well, have you tried smiling? No, that's not going to work. It's a similar problem. You've got an emotional state that's completely disconnected from your environment, and you don't want to have this emotional state, and you need some way to deal with it. The good thing about anger, unlike depression, is that anger requires a lot of energy, and eventually you run out of energy and stop being angry.
You just get too tired to be mad.
Exactly. And then I would be depressed, but it's not like clinical depression. It would just be like, you know, moping for a couple hours. But, you know, I recognize, and at first I just thought, you know, everything in my life was sucked and everybody was annoying and I hated everything and everyone was a jerk and this guy's an asshole and I hate my boss and everything sucks. And after a while, it was really the moment of clarity for me was one day I was sitting there programming and I'd been slamming my head against a problem for a few hours and I hadn't raged out yet. And I was like, huh, you know, I would have bashed a keyboard by now. If this was just last week, what's the difference? And I began thinking of it in terms of like a health problem and not just this is the natural way I'm supposed to. I realized that my emotional state was unnatural. And I started looking for ways to deal with it. The other thing is I cut way down on sugars, way less sugars and other like super processed crap in my diet. Got rid of the as many asthma drugs as I dared. Got the steroids out of my life. And I'm getting older, so you know you don't have that supercharge of adrenaline in your system when you're not a young man anymore. And that fixed it for me. But yeah,
so that's my mechanical keyboard.
Yeah, that was a weird turn. I apologize for hijacking it, but it occurred to me halfway into my spiel, this might be useful for somebody out there. Maybe somebody out there will not smash up something that's valuable to them, or they won't say something horrible to the people around them. I was always very careful. Like I always wanted
Newegg
everybody to
probably
stay
isn't very happy about it.
But yeah. But it's one final note is like, make sure you don't aim this anger at people you love. My wife is a super, super helpful person. So I'd blow up and she would run into the room and try and solve the problem for me. And all I need is to unload this anger. I just need to yell and smash something and get it out of my system. I don't actually want any help. And so I'm talking in a raised voice and now she feels like I'm yelling at her. And we did this for a while, like, and then we'd have a fight. You know, because I'm, in her mind, I was yelling at her. No, I'm just yelling. If you weren't in here, I would continue to yell anyway. But now you've come in and thrown yourself between me and my keyboard trying to help me. And instead, now your feelings are hurt because I'm just ranting. And
blaming
that was
your wife for trying to be a nice person, Seamus.
I didn't blame her, but I really did. It's okay, it's another level of frustration. It's like, okay, I don't want to be shouting at you, but I really need to shout right now, so why don't you get away from me? And I didn't have the awareness to say, yeah, I didn't have the awareness to say that to her, and so it took us a while before she realized, oh, Seamus doesn't actually want my help, and you know, she knew to just let it go. But yeah, you do have to be careful. Don't aim that anger at people you love. Or at people. I hope that helps somebody. Let's talk about video games some more. Super Hot. Who's played Super Hot?
I'm thinking about it, but I probably should get through some of these other video games I have on my stack first.
It looks really good, but I haven't had time for it yet.
I have been playing through it.
Okay, Chris, indulge me. Is this the sort of game that looks good when you set up a cool, like, video for our gaming, and then you're like, I can do that, and then you cannot do that? Like a Battlefield-type game?
I don't know what that question means.
It's like one of those games where you see somebody playing it, and they're being awesome, and you think, oh, I want to be awesome, and you play the game, and you realize, oh, what they're doing is next to impossible, and it would take tons of practice before I could ever do that very cool thing.
No. The whole game is designed to make you feel awesome and cool. So it's you can definitely do some cool things like that. You might not be, like, top tier being able to go for ultimate amazing high scores, but you can definitely do some cool stuff very easily. And it's a game designed to make you feel like you're in, basically that you're an awesome action movie hero. So for those that don't understand or have not heard of it, Super Hot is basically a game that is played in slow motion, and as you move, time actually progresses. And as you stand still, time slows down to not quite nothing, but very, very slow. And the idea is, each level is basically kind of a first-person shooter as a puzzle, where you need to figure out how to take on these AI, these guys that are shooting at you, by dodging their bullets literally in slow motion. So they fire, and you see the bullets coming to your left, so you know you have to move to the right, or just walk around the bullets. But as soon as you start walking, the bullets start moving in real time, so you have to sort of, before you move, think, and then act. So it's a little puzzly, but it's also really designed to make you do really cool things. So, for example, you can not just shoot dudes, but you can also pick up various objects in the environment and throw them at guys so that they drop their guns. This is not a first-person shooter in the sense that, like, you get a gun, and then there's ammo everywhere, and you get to pick it up and reload. Every gun has a preset number of bullets, and as you run out of bullets, you need to find another way to get another gun. Sometimes that's picking up the guns that the guys you've killed have dropped. Other times it's sneaking up behind a guy, whacking him in the back of the, or throwing an ashtray at his head from across the room, and as he drops his gun and it flies at you in slow motion, you grab it out of the air and then shoot him in the gut. And, like, when you play that back in real time, it looks really cool, right? Like, in real time, I just grabbed an ashtray in the corner of the room, threw it at his head, grabbed the gun, shot him, boom! But it may be 45 seconds of actual gameplay to get you there.
Does it do the Devil Daggers thing where you can see a replay in real time?
Yes, every level ends with you getting to see a replay of what happened, which is pretty cool.
I really need to play this.
Cool.
And it's... I don't know. I'm really enjoying my time with it. My favorite thing I've done so far, late in the game, I don't know if this is really a spoiler, but late in the game you get the ability to not just punch guys and steal their guns and shoot them, but switch which host body you're in. So you see a bad guy across the room and you can teleport to him. And this is actually critical for some of the harder levels, because there will be a thing like you spawn surrounded by guys. And one of my favorite levels was one where I spawn with a sword, with a katana, and there's a guy directly across the hall from you, but everyone else on the sides of the hall are about to shoot you. I throw my katana like a spear down towards the guy at the other end, teleport my body or my consciousness to the guy that I threw the katana at, grab the katana out of the air, and then start taking guys down from behind them. You can do some really cool stuff.
That's cool.
It's not flawless. I'm not a real big fan of the weird story emphasis they have going on, which doesn't quite work, I don't think. I wish some of the playback stuff was a little bit more... it's really designed to make you feel really awesome, and then you watch the playback, and it is awesome, but you want it to be just a little bit more awesome. Like, you ever read a book, and then you see the movie, and seeing the actual movie realized is not as good as what was in your imagination? I feel the same way about Super Hot while I'm playing it. Like, while I'm doing an awesome thing, I feel like the world's most amazing badass, and it's so cool, and I am the coolest dude. And then you watch the playback, and it's like, yeah, it's cool. Yeah, I guess it's cool. Like, there's something about actually seeing the playback in real time that isn't as cool as on the fly, like, looking around, seeing an ashtray, grabbing it, tossing it at the dude, grabbing his gun out of the air and shooting him. That feels really cool when you're, like, in the moment. But then you watch the cutscene and it's 3 seconds long, and it's not, like, edited the way a movie would be edited to make that action look cool. It's just first person, look at ashtray, look at guy, grab gun, shoot guy, and it's over in 3 seconds, and it doesn't feel like it has that punch that you thought it would.
You have just described me editing, spoiler warning.
The thing that stretches my incredulity here is not that you're a mind-possessing, time-traveling master of kung fu. It's that you exist in a world that apparently has ashtrays? That's hard to picture.
I can't remember
the last time
I saw
an ashtray.
Well, it's weird because the game is, like, the environments are all grayscale and white, and the enemies are all just, like, bright red monster characters. And I don't mean monsters, they're people, but, like, glowing red people are the bad guys, and the environments are all grayscale. And it's weird because... Oh, go ahead, Ruska.
Oh, okay. So, again, having not played it, one thing I think is kind of interesting, just from, like, a indie games development perspective, is that it's universally marketed as time stops when you're not moving.
Yeah, that's kind of a misnomer. What's happening.
Yeah, it's clearly slowing down, not stopping, which is, you know, it's a somewhat significant difference. But I think it sort of clearly indicates, like, you can't market it with time slows down, because that's, like, for some reason, even though people watch it, they're instantly like, yes. If you describe it as time slows down when you're not moving, people lose interest.
Yeah, it's like describing a power-up is, well, it makes you kind of invulnerable. It immediately makes it sound way less awesome.
I get why they did it for a few reasons. One is there are times where you're waiting for a bad guy to come around a corner, but you're hiding in a corner. So their choice was basically make time pass at least a little bit while you're standing still, or when you're in that situation, require players to wiggle in place just so that they have kinetic movement so that time passes. And faced with that choice, I can see why they said time passes just very, very slowly when you're frozen.
And it probably helps, like, when you're standing still, you can still see how things are moving. The bullets aren't going to hit you quickly, but you can perceive which way they're going. Where if there was no motion at all, you'd have the still photograph effect where you can't really tell what all the elements in the scene are doing until you move.
Yeah, because you have the tracer on the bullet, which gives you a little bit of guesses of the trajectory. But without moving in a 3D space, it's hard to, I guess, visualize exactly where it's going without seeing it move. Still, I'm enjoying it. I'm not a super big fan of the story, but I dig the gameplay. It's the first game I've played in a while where just I wish it had less story and more just give me awesome gameplay, because I'm enjoying playing it a lot.
I've heard, like, the overall story is just completely incomprehensible. Is it at all like playing Receiver?
Worse, because Receiver didn't really have much of a story. You could, like, find the tapes or whatever, but
those
no
fucking
one really
tapes
cared.
Of the guy rambling on about black helicopter shit.
No, this isn't quite that bad. They put the story, like, so the game originated as a game jam or a Ludum Dare or
yeah,
like one of the game jams. It originated as a demo out of that, and the demo really was just a couple levels. They took that and sort of came up with a story to put at the forefront of this. It's not incomprehensible, it's just kind of, it doesn't feel appropriate for the kind of game it is, right? Like, this kind of game is very mechanics-driven, there's lots of cool little things. I don't know if you guys saw on Super Bunny Hop George's Twitter, he found out that you can use the katana to knock bullets away if you time it exactly right. That's, again, tons of little tiny cool mechanical touches. but it's not really a character-driven, story-driven thing. The experience, it feels weirdly tacked on, and I would have preferred it have less story, frankly, but...
Yeah.
Like, yeah.
All right. Okay, let's do some listener questions. All right, first up is a question from Wheels. People talk a lot about bad trends in video games. What? Who does that? When has anybody on my site ever talked about bad trends in video games?
I don't know, but we should hunt them down.
I know. By the way, my Mass Effect series is still going. People talk a lot about bad trends in video games. What recent trends in video games do you want to see more of? All right, there's a question.
Romance. More fucking romance. There's not enough of it. And some games pretend like they have romance and they don't. It's just friendship. Who gives a shit about that? Fucking romance. That's what I want to see more of. There. I did it. Do you think Mass Effect would be as popular as it is if it didn't have romance? Because I don't. I think it would just be like, that's a pretty good game.
So, here's a question. Here's a question. I thought it was interesting that Mass Effect 3, I'm going to say something good about Mass Effect 3, had a romance between your crew members. I'm sort of spoiling my Mass Effect series here, but there's a romance between crew members, between Edie and Joker. How do you feel about that kind of romance compared to main character romance? I love both. You love both? I actually thought, you know what? I like helping other people hook up more than I like my character hooking up. No. It always feels a little bit...
I like my character hooking up. I know that it's awkward for some people, like, oh, weird sex scene, or oh, it's weird telling this computer character that I love it. But I don't have a problem with that. Yeah. I think it's great.
Yeah. But I really like seeing... I like the idea of doing some kind of matchmaker thing within the context of
yes.
a game.
That would be rad. So...
Clearly the solution here is to combine the two and have threesome romances.
Jade Empire did it.
You
can almost do it in Mass Effect 1. Isn't it in Mass Effect 1, you're like, Liara is like, I would totally have a threesome with you and Kaden. And then Kaden's like, no, that's weird. Am I making that up or is that real?
No, I think that's real.
That's real.
Fucking Kaden. That's why
nobody likes
Kaden. Ah, fuck that guy.
Raphael Sparge, why do you keep playing lame people?
So what others... Whatever... Rutscoring, you indicated you had one of these you wanted to talk about.
Did I? Because I have... I am drawing a blank at the moment, but I'll bite.
Rutscoring doesn't like video games.
I actually like the roguelike trend. I think that that's good for video games. I think it's good for video games that we're bringing that thing back.
Aren't you tired of every indie game describing itself as a fucking roguelike, though? Aren't you tired of that, at least? Like, it drives me crazy.
It's better than every indie game having retro pixel art graphics.
Not by much, Joshua. A Good Robot is technically marketed as a roguelike.
Oh, no!
And it has retro pixel art graphics, doesn't it?
Oh,
son
God.
Of a bitch.
No!
No, shut up!
It has modern... it has modern retro graphics that uses pixels.
Did we just get banned from the diecast, Mumbles?
We just got banned from the diecast.
Actually,
oh my God.
I wanted it to... I originally gave the game kind of pixel art, and once real artists joined, they leaned away from that, and... They basically got rid of our lead artist, Mick, took us away from the pixel art style. Like, I had giant, chunky pixels and super primary colors.
Oh, my God.
And okay, good pixel art is gorgeous, and bad pixel art is still, like, you can put up with it. So if you're a shitty artist, pixel art's the way to go. Like, if you're a programmer and not an artist at all, then better to do pixel art than to try and draw something... for real.
I know. I just think it's funny.
Yeah.
Well, there's also, like, the argument to be made that that's a lot more time and cost effective to do pixel art as opposed to, like, hand animation or 3D environments or anything like that.
I mean, look at Undertale. Undertale is the fucking most popular game ever, and it's just, oh, it's the most basic fucking graphics you could possibly have in a game.
Undertale was made by a musician, though. All of his cool stuff.
Yeah, but that's what I'm saying, is that you can create these characters that people, yeah, like, draw fan art of until the fucking end of time just by putting together some pixels. So it's not, have to, like, it's not out, that bad.
Is Undine, like, bald aside from the ponytail, or does she actually have bangs? And nobody can figure out the answer to that question because it's inconsistent.
So I to come back around to that, I just like the trend of having games where your character's, like, success and failure has more gravity to it. And I'm the sort of person where I either want it to be that, or I want to be able to quick save whenever the fuck I want. I want to be able to quick save like 6 times after I enter the room, because if I die of a, like, coronary while moving for the staircase, I don't want to have to, like, pick up my smoothie from the counter again.
I want a game that's a roguelike that has the option in difficulty settings to say, no, I don't actually want to permadie.
So I'm slowly going through Pillars of Eternity. I still haven't beat the game because I go through it super slow. And I got to this one quest where you have to have 20 in intelligence and 20 in believability, or, I don't know, confidence or some shit. And that's insane in a role-playing game where you're trying to, like, build up your character a certain way. And I'm like, and either that or you have to be really, really, really good at fighting. So there is no way for me to do this quest correctly at all, except for the super bad option, which is killing a child, a baby. And I'm like, I can't even do this quest because it's so severe about the choices that you make. And I feel like that's maybe going too far. Like, give some accessibility, you know what I mean? I don't want to be like, I guess I can't do that fucking quest. Fuck you.
Like, you have to kill a baby if you don't have the right build. I understand, yes, this is a response to the... I understand they're trying to correct for the Skyrim thing where you can become head of the Mage's Guild without ever casting a spell. And yeah, that's bullshit. But then you're going to go all the way to the other far end of the spectrum, and if you have the wrong build, you kill a baby. It's like, what the shit? Can we not find some mid? Is there not any sane point between these two?
Oh my god. Yeah.
A trend I like is a trend that ended, which was the trend of realism being everything gray. Like, even AAA games are making sure to put in lots of color these days, and I am loving it. I am so happy to see how colorful modern games are. And that whole mid-2000s thing of, like, grayscale games, I'm glad that's over.
I like how you answered the question, people talk a lot about bad trends in games, what good trends do you like, by talking about a bad trend.
That ended.
Well,
that ended.
And turned into a good trend. Now we're in a trend of beautiful color. And look, Fallout. In a fucking Fallout game, they have beautiful colors.
Yeah. I mean, really Fallout 4 is pretty vibrant.
Yes.
For that thing, but...
Yeah, Fallout 4 is not gorgeous, but when I walked into, like, Diamond City, I was like, okay, there's a color, and there's some food. You've at least got a B minus at this point.
They have a farm. Whoa.
Yeah.
And just the entry to Diamond City is aesthetically pleasing. It's got a good view of the city as you enter. Somebody put some thought into it. It's not like the Fallout 3 thing where you come into a really impressive room, but you're facing, the door has you spawn, like, facing a pillar. And then all the lights are shining on the brown, on the gray concrete, and all the really cool stuff is in shadow off to the side. And, like, nobody thought about, like, well, how will people experience this space? It feels like somebody put a lot of thought into that in Fallout 4. And I appreciate that.
So, I actually really fucking like walking simulators and really want to see a lot more of them.
Oh.
That's my controversial trend to send up here. I like the idea of games telling stories through the environment and through non shooty man's in the facings.
I agree.
I recently replayed Gone Home after having played Firewatch, just to compare and contrast the two in my mind. I really, really like a lot of stuff about Gone Home. I can't wait until they bring out their new game about space. It's Gone Home in space, you guys. I don't want to see the Chinese Room doing it. Just walking simulators are fine as long as the Chinese Room's not doing it. That's my grudge against developers. You know, walking simulators are fine as long as there is a story.
Old titles being revived. I love this trend. I'm super happy. Like, old teams getting back together. Old retro game. Like, it felt like for a while we just threw away the 90s. And now we're kind of picking through the trash bin and saying, well, wait, do we want to save a couple of these things before we throw the whole decade out? And there's, like, a bunch of Kickstarter game for retro shooters. And the Descent team got... We've got, like... We had no Descent-type games for, like, 15 years. And then... Last year we got one, and this year we're getting another one.
Yeah, you should probably put a caveat there that it's being revived by people who understood the games in the first place, and not by corporate chills. You know.
Yeah, yeah. But even
XCOM, I mean, and the new Descent stuff is cool. The fourth was not.
Right, right. But even at that, I mean, I just like that everybody's trying, even if they're not all winners. I like that we're trying to rescue some of the, figuring out which parts of the past are a core part of gaming and which parts of it were sort of unfortunate digressions as we figured out how to make games. And just, you know, always keep doing that. I love that trend. People like, well, let's revive this. Oh, actually, that was a terrible idea. There's a reason that idea died down. But let's try and revive this. Oh, people really like it. We're getting adventure games again. We're getting, What do you call a Doom shooter? Like, run at high speed and dodge projectiles kind of shooter. Does that have a name? Doom clone?
A Quake shooter?
A run and gun is, I guess...
Oh, no, first person, right, okay.
Yeah, first person. Like, we're getting those. Even Quake 4 is trying to be one of those. And I just love this trend of, like... Seeing what in the just because it was in the past doesn't mean it's terrible. Let's see what worked. Let's
Didn't
mix.
Quake 4 come out like 10 years ago?
Yeah. Not Quake 4, Doom 4.
Quake 4 is so bad.
Speaking of games that got revived that didn't turn out awesome.
Like, I brought this up in the Elder Scrolls series, but like they recently started doing Radiant quests in Skyrim. And the point of a Radiant quest is that it's like a quest that can draw from kind of procedurally generated variables so you never run out of things to do. That's just how they did things until Morrowind.
Yeah, they're like, we invented this new thing. And it's like the way we use... They've come
and
out
they've
with a
decided
new
to
cutting
do them
edge...
exactly as poorly as they did it before.
We've got this new cutting-edge technique. Instead of the game running constantly, there'll be discrete turns. You'll take a turn, the other player will take a turn. We're calling it turn-based. We think this is really going to change the way people
we've
play
trademarked
video games.
We've trademarked and patented the turn-based stuff, so nobody else can do it.
So, Radiant Quests... I didn't notice that, Rutskarn, until you wrote about it. I like totally did not notice that Bethesda was basically pretending this shit that they abandoned years ago was something they recently invented, and I thought that was hilarious.
They do that all the time too. Like they when they demoed the combat system for Skyrim, they're like, it's a new combat system where you can power attack, stagger opponents, and like three other things, and I'm like, you guys did this in Oblivion. This is the same press release you released for Oblivion. It's the same one. I remember it.
Bethesda Softworks is proud to announce, and then it's just the word Oblivion crossed out, and Skyrim written under it in crayon.
The Elder Scrolls, and then 4 is scribbled out, and the Arabic numeral 6 is added.
You could leave in the entire paragraph about how new and cutting edge the graphics will be, since that paragraph will be exactly the same.
Campster, what trend do you like in video games?
Yeah, give us a trend, Campster.
I got two, and I don't know if they're really that interesting or good, but the first one isn't really even a trend, it's just something I want to see more of, which is, after playing Firewatch, I'd love to see more games about, like, older people stories, and not always young people falling in love, but maybe, like, middle-aged love, or even older people. We need more games that aren't just, like, young people doing stuff. So I think that should be a trend if it isn't one yet. And maybe that's just because I'm old. But the other one that is kind of a trend now that I want to see continue, I'm really digging the revival of sort of retro 3D, you know, low-fi, low-poly, like Devil Daggers is a good example. The new Hitbox game that I can't remember the name of. Just lots of stuff that's really lo-fi 3D that looks really, really clunky and ugly, and I know a lot of people hate it, but I really, really, really dig that aesthetic.
Me too.
House
Me
of
too.
Scares.
I love chunky polygons. So one of the things I like about Super Hot is how it looks like everybody is like 100 or 200 polygons per model, which to give you a modern model is going to be like, oh, somebody like Lara Croft is probably like 100,000 or something crazy like that. And the ones in
100 to 200, that was probably your polygon budget when you started with Active Worlds, wasn't it?
That's what I used to make. That was my budget. Actually, my budget was like 300, but I always, because I just liked trying to go as low as I could.
My budget was a triangle.
No, my budget was 300, but I liked to go as low as I could, try and shave it down. But like 100 to 200 is like the guards in the old Thief games. You know how their feet come to points and their hands are just like giant triangle mittens? That's like 100 polygon model, I think. I hope I'm not wrong on this. It has been a couple decades, and maybe my memory is fuzzy, but I'm pretty sure.
Like the Quake 1 and 2 player models and whatever, that kind of thing.
All right. You know what? I think we did a diecast. What do you guys think?
Really? I'm not sure, Seamus. I wouldn't bet on it.
Well, I wasn't listening. When are we going to get started?
Oh, wait, a question.
A question?
Yeah, hey guys, can we be done with the diecast? I haven't talked about my bunion yet.
I was going to do the question about cooking and then let Josh begin to answer it and then cut him off, but I can't find it.
That's so mean.
I've got a better way to end this diecast. Hey, Campster. Campster.
Campster. Campster.
I'm not going to dignify you with a response.
Say a little narrative dissonance.
Not going to do it. Nope.
Hey, Josh. Awkward. Josh. Awkward. Josh. Say stop shooting me. Say stop shooting.
Ludonarrative dissonance.
Damn it, Josh.
Hey, Seamus. Hey, Seamus. What do they eat?
Stop shooting me. Mumbles, you need to get a catchphrase that you refuse to say.
No, I'm good. I don't need that.
Do I have a catchphrase? I'm good.
I think your catchphrase is
be annoying, Retzgarn. That's your catchphrase. Being annoying.
Man, that shit unlock.
Yeah. Or, well, last weekend when I was LARPing.
Have I ever once begun a conversation with that?
You have.
Your
definitely.
Catchphrase okay, is just what's my job LARP about? Title.
What happened
like,
to my LARP?
Oh, we were pretending to be English businessmen from the train era, and I had a great hat. Also, I was a vampire. Yes, that happens.
Not even close.
That is not totally accurate. What happened.
That you guys were having exactly. Like some sort of stately dinner, and then someone got murdered halfway through, and you weren't sure if it was actually like part
seriously.
Of the game or someone actually got stabbed.
Oh, they're doing negotiations for money, train money.
It's always something like, yeah, I was a railway tycoon, and I was having an argument with this judge, and he didn't like me because I was a goblin. But you're like, what's going on in this game?
I'm not crazy.
Then you yelled
this
magic
is exactly
missile.
What it is. Yeah.
None of that is true.
I threw a tennis ball.
Okay, wait. Okay, in my Tuesday tabletop game, we did kidnap a railroad magnate, but I know I haven't told you guys that story.
You have told me a story about you and your friends were diplomats or some shit, and there was some, like, gang war. This really happened, Retzgarn, and I'm sure I'm getting some of the details wrong, but it sounds like all of your LARPing is just getting drunk around a fucking table.
Is it possible that all of the details are wrong? That these details are just all incorrect?
Why are you getting defensive? Why are you getting defensive? This is what your LARPing sounds like. And it doesn't... If it's fun for you, then whatever.
Was it... So this is how we're ending the diecast. This was the end of the diecast.
I have no idea.
Hopefully somewhere in there.